Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host as always. And today we are joined by Jonathan Herps, a strategic powerhouse with over 35 years of leadership experience spanning Australia to Southeast Asia. As the CEO and founder of Scale Up Growth Partners, Jonathan is a beacon for entrepreneurial CEOs, guiding them to scale their businesses and achieve unprecedented growth. He's not just a coach, he's been in the trenches, understanding the highs and lows of running a business. From grappling with cash flow to aligning teams, Jonathan's insights resonate with CEOs of growth-minded, small and medium-sized enterprises. His clients rave about his transformative impact, praising his innovative vision and grounded approach. Beyond coaching, Jonathan hosts the Entrepreneur Stories podcast, sharing invaluable insights from industry leaders. With a law degree, MBA, and multiple coaching certifications, he is a force to be reckoned with. I've asked him to join us here today to share his story and help us unlock our business's true potential. So, Jonathan, thank you so much for joining us, my friend. How are you doing?
I'm going to let you write my bio.
pat on the back there.
I'm more complimentary than I am, so thank you very much.
All good. I appreciate you joining us here, and I always like to ask, before we get into the nuts and bolts of what mistakes people making and what you think the pillars of foundations of success are, I always like to ask, how did you even get into business? Do you come from a family of entrepreneurs? Is this like a generational trait, or?
Look, it's a bit of both. My father was an entrepreneur, a property investor in his own right, but always a single man band. In some ways, I fell into it. I spent the first 20 years of my career as a mixture of a banker and a soldier. And really, when I turned 40, I burnt out and stepped back and looked at where my clients had made their dollars. And it was always in real estate. And so I then spent the next 20 years running real estate development and management companies in Australia, Middle East. And moved back to Australia in 2015 with two little babies we'd adopted. And it was like, I actually don't want a big job anymore. I fell into the into coaching and coaching CEOs. And I've been doing that since 2017.
Yeah, I think real estate, I won't pretend to be a real estate guru, but I've spoken to enough people with the show. And it sounds like real estate is actually the real estate business is very transferable to business. Because just the buying and selling of a rental property is almost like buying and selling a business in a lot of respects, in terms of due diligence, how it operates as a service, essentially, when it's a rental property. And so there's a lot, even legally, a lot of that transfers over to the business world. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And the other thing about real estate, if you're mum, dad, investor, phenomenal. But if you're running a real estate business, it is a business. I've run in my company's teams from 12 up to 3,000. But yeah, they're serious businesses.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, 3,000. You must not like sleep. So what were some of the greatest challenges in your business career and how did you overcome them?
Look, I think boredom is one of the key ones for me. I know that sounds an interesting way to start. And it's interesting with founders that they tend to be the same in my experience. So understanding what my unique ability is, that's a term I get from a guy called Dan Sullivan who runs strategic coaching. Dan was my coach for a number of years. And so understanding my unique ability, what am I really good at and what do I love doing? And then focusing myself there and surrounding myself with other people who have different unique abilities. And given we're on a podcast and as an example of that, we've just hit number 102 interviews on my podcast with CEOs. And yeah, the only thing I do is do the interview. Everything else is outsourced because I know if I left it to me, it probably wouldn't happen. Everything from recruiting the interviewees through to managing it, managing the process through to developing the videos, all that sort of stuff, and promoting it, social media, all that, all done by someone else. And that's a really good example. So in my business now, I do three things. I coach, which I love. I develop, similar to you, really actionable one-page tools. And I interview on the podcast. And my team do absolutely everything else.
Got it. I love that. I'm a writer downer, so I'm listening.
Yes, so am I.
Yeah. So you coach, you develop IP, which typically is your actionable one-page tools, and then you do interviews.
Yeah. And everything else is done by my team.
Yeah, I love that. One of my favorite mentors, Ken McCarthy, the godfather of internet marketing, he used to say, delegate as much as you can. So you're calling the shots, analyzing the stats and copywriting. And I've updated that to be like delegate/automate everything that you can. So you're calling the shots, analyzing the stats and communicating because you got to communicate with your staff, vendors, customers, but all the time you need to be constantly communicating with other people. And I think that's, it's really, yeah, I love that. Yeah. I love that outlook.
I think, I didn't miss one. The other thing is generating content. So if you were to look at my, and I think this is where we hooked up. If you look at my LinkedIn profile, I'm posting every day and it's content focused on my perfect future client, you know, CEO, founder. And that's, so that's the fourth thing. And they're all areas I love.
I love that. I love that. Well, that's almost like Ikigai, that Japanese concept of finding what you're good at, what you're passionate about, and what you can get paid for. Yeah. And making that, making your life all about that nonstop 24/7. I think that's a fantastic way to do it. So now what would you recommend to someone who's maybe starting out and struggling in business in general? Like they know they've got an idea, they've got a vision of having a business of some sort. What do you recommend they do?
The first thing I think I'd do is I would start looking for people like you and people like me. I talk a lot about, I think I posted a blog on it last week on virtual mentors. And particularly coming out of COVID, I used to travel to the States for 3 weeks a year and go to all the business conferences and business learnings and everything else. And of course, we couldn't do that. So I have put together this group of virtual mentors. There are people like Dan Sullivan that I mentioned, people like you, people like Simon Sinek, who wrote a book called The Power of Why. People, if you look at your website and the characteristics of successful businesses and founders, and if you look at my blogs on how to be a CEO, how to be a startup CEO, I wrote something on that about a week or so ago. So find some virtual mentors and follow them. And people who, and the way you, and there are so many different ways of doing it, TEDx talks, YouTube, Spotify, Apple podcasts, they can be ebooks, they can be blogs, etc. But go and look for virtual mentors that you can learn from, because there's so much out there. The other interesting thing I've only recently discovered is that the power of, I find LinkedIn is a critical part of me communicating what I do. And I've recently discovered that LinkedIn, I'm a bit late to the party in some ways, but LinkedIn classifies people as top thought leaders in their area. And you can go and search for that. And it's fascinating when you go and find these people who've got 100,000 followers and the lessons you can learn from them just by looking at what they do. I've got three things that I talk about. One is R&D, rip off and duplicate, but always give accreditation where you get it from. Secondly, everything is downstream of lead generation. So if you can, the critical part is generating leads. And if you are generating leads that lead to sales, you can fix everything else and you may have to scramble. Right. And the third one is all stress, frustrations, and bottlenecks can be traced back to an asset deficiency. So when I say building IP, building writing every day, that's about building assets, which some people have asked me to build a course around my stuff. I'm not sure that I'll do that. One day, you never know.
I love that.
So R&D, so virtual mentors, R&D, everything is downstream of lead generation, and all stress, frustrations, and bottlenecks can be traced back to an asset deficiency. I'm looking down because I've got four post-it notes attached.
Well, I agree with that because a lot of people suffer because they are missing a process in place, or the process is broken, or they don't have a person in place, or processes and people, essentially.
Well, your point about automation.
Right. Automation. So one of the things I've learned, it's a hard lesson that's been learned. Some rules are written in blood. You really have to make sure it works before you automate it. Otherwise, all your garbage in, garbage out. So you can automate a lot of things. It doesn't mean it's going to make you any more successful. And it can actually cause way more problems.
That is absolutely true. But
yeah, crawl, walk, run. And yeah, I think that's a really important one. But I love, and when you talked about finding a virtual mentor, you then went on to talk about books and podcasts and TED Talks. I almost wanted to interrupt because I think there's a place and time, and obviously we've all gone through those, but I love that you talked about a virtual mentor, because we have two people that are trying to win a gold medal. They both want to go to the Olympics, win a gold medal. And one guy, or they're guys, whatever. And one guy's in a garage with a buddy, and they've got all these tapes, cassettes, books, TED Talks, YouTube videos, and they're going to figure it out. And on the other side, you have someone who has mentors who have been there, done that, and are personally accountable because they've been compensated. They've been paid money. There's often that bartering. Hey, I'll do you a favor. You do me a favor. But then there's no accountability. When you pay someone money, I am paying you money for this result. When you get a mentor, there's money that's been put to get something done. The same scenario, guy and his buddy in a garage, they have full potential to win a gold medal. but they're going to figure it out with books and videos and whatever, right? Hodgepodge it together, so to speak, cobble it together. That was the word I was looking for. And you've got the other one that has like a board of virtual mentors, people who have been there and done that and will be there to guide the process. And who's going to get there? They both could get there. Who's going to get there with less heartache, less setback, less injury? And yeah. I just thought that was great.
Spot on. There's a story, I've got his name. He wrote a book with, he co-wrote a book called 10X is Easier Than 2X. And he talked about his son, and his son was a very good tennis player. And the question he asked his son was, do you really want to go all the way in tennis? And he said, yes. And he said, who's the best tennis player in our state, tennis coach in our state that has the track record of getting people to the US Open? And the point he made was, if you want to make substantial change, go and find the person who can help you do that. Mm. And people pay me a lot of money to be their coach. Why do they do that? Because I was going to say an old gray hair, but old no hair. Run multiple companies, countries, small, large, made pretty much every mistake in the book, studied it all for many years, and they pay me to accelerate what they're doing. They pay me to hold them accountable. They pay me to, and they pay me a lot of money, hold them accountable. They a cheerleader, an accountability partner, a teacher, all of those things. But when it comes down to it, I can accelerate, which is what you do. I can accelerate their progress dramatically.
Oh, 100%. I mentioned before this call, we just got a new puppy. And we're training them, but I'm also going to hire a trainer because I can do it, and I can watch YouTube videos, figure out, or I can just pay someone some money and go, hey, bring me this dog back when it can do these five things.
Yeah, and the point with that though, Daryl, is, and I agree with you, but at the end of the day, the person that has got to be trained is you, your wife and your daughter, and your staff in the house. I say it because you're in the Philippines, so you could very well have help.
Yeah.
I remember I raised a guide dog puppy at one stage and had him for 10 months. And the trainers came out to train me to train the dog.
Yes.
It's like having children. It's setting that example.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I did a 6-week thing for my dog I had previously before she was kidnapped and eaten in Vietnam. But I fully get that. But the point there is saying that it's an accelerant. It's an accelerant.
Exactly right. Yeah,
we can't undo the training that's done. But it's an accelerant in the sense that I'm going to have the expert come. He's going to help make sure that one, like you said, the family's going to be trained. Our helpers are going to be trained. And then also that the dog is trained. And that's what he comes in to do versus us hobbling through it together. Some of us getting ahead of others and some of us falling back. We're all going to achieve a certain benchmark in less time with less heartache, less effort, and just get on with our lives and enjoy having this beautiful little.
Agreed. And that comes back to that. Yeah. You start your business. Go look for those virtual mentors because there's very little new in business. Most of it's done by, a lot of it stems back to a guy called Peter Drucker and Jim Collins. If you go to those two and read their books, you'll get pretty much every business lesson you need.
I love that. So what are some of what specific skills or behaviors do you believe are important to improve and develop?
I think in my practice, I coach three things. I coach CEOs and founders. So I coach them personally. Mm-hmm. I coach them in leadership, and then I coach them and their leadership teams in actually growing the business. One of the things about founders is it's one of those interesting things. It's the shiny object syndrome as an entrepreneur, and you tend to follow that new thing. So one of the things I look at very quickly once we've got making sure we've got the revenue in place is a lot of the time put a chief of staff or a chief operating officer in place so that the founder can be the visionary and they've got someone who can make it all happen behind them. So it's understanding, getting the founder to understand what is their unique ability, what is it that they're good at, and then how do we then retrofit behind them a leadership team to actually fill in all those gaps. It's the thing about founders, they're all immersed in the business. And How often do people sell the business or retire and die within a couple of years because they've got nothing else in their life? Coaching the it's making sure that I coach on basis we're building a self-managing company that can work without the founder if they choose.
Yeah.
It's about getting the founder in a position they can take 3 months off and actually taking 3 months off and the business just keeps powering without them.
It's about coaching
them as a leader. Many founders, when they're growing the business, you start by doing everything. the critical thing about growing a business, and it's fascinating. Yeah, the numbers are, in America, Mexico, Europe, and Australia, only 0.4% of companies get over $1 million in revenue. That's a staggering number, if you think. So yes. The critical part, and it's all about how many staff you have, because staff add complexity. So you need to learn how to be a leader to manage your team. And part of that is knowing when to actually grow the team. All of the stats out there say that, I don't know how they get this number, but the best number of staff to manage direct reports to you is 4.6. Now, it's an average. But yeah, if you've got, as I was talking to a potential client the other day, 20 staff reporting to them, you'll never work on the business. You're stuck in it forever. And that's not why we have businesses. We have a business to generate a sale sometime down the track or to generate cash in the meantime. That's really why we have a business. Yes, we're passionate about it, but we need to be able to, a good example, I had appendicitis, severe appendicitis in January, and essentially I had to take a month off. And luckily I've grown my business. I've got a team around me that they could keep it going while I was incapacitated. 6 weeks. Now I could very easily, if I'd been me, just me, business can just crumble like that. Same thing when you've got everybody reporting to you. So it's the you, it's the teaching them to become a leader, and then growing the team. And how do you scale a business? And I think there are four key areas there. It's the strategy, it's the execution, the processes, the systems, all of that. It's the people, making sure we've got the right people on the bus doing the right things. Mm. They're A players. And finally, you've got enough cash to support your growth. It's not that complex, but it is hard, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah. It's I say that, but paid advertising is very easy to understand. It's a very simple process, but it's very hard to get to work.
Yeah. And right. I've never got that.
But if you can get it to work, it's what changes a mom and pop shop or a local brand to become nationwide and oftentimes international, because they figure that out. But it's an easy process to explain, but it's hard to accomplish. That's even like fitness, right?
Yeah.
Eat plants and protein. That's it. Just plants and protein. If it has a food label, it's not food. Real simple. Plants, protein. There's no food label on the carrots, on the chicken, on the broccoli, the celery. There's no food labels on those. On the walnuts, no food label. Plants, protein. Get enough protein. Eat all you need of plants. And then exercise. And everybody knows this, but it's hard. It's hard. How do you, but kids, but my Netflix series, but it's easy, but it's hard. The doctor, if the doctor says an apple a day will keep the doctor away, that's easy to do, but it's also easy to not do.
Yeah.
And so it's almost like you're saying, but you can explain it easily, but actually going through, it's almost like that man in the arena by, who was it? One of the US presidents. I just had a brain fart. But the idea is that it's not the critic who deserves the praise. It's the man in the arena, like mired in dirt and blood. That's where you really need a coach as well, because it's tough when you're playing the game to see yourself as you're in it. You're so in it.
Absolutely. And look, I'll give you another interesting example, because I know you've got, how old is it your daughter?
Yes, she'll be 5, but she acts like she's 16.
So is she, I've got a 9-year-old daughter. You have no idea what you've got coming at you. But
I'm already digging holes and polishing my gun, so it's in preparation.
Sorry. So I recently, one of my virtual mentors is a guy called Dan Priestley he's a co-founder of a company called Dent Global.
Okay.
And he recently did a blog or a video webinar thing on how to raise entrepreneurial children.
Oh, I'm on.
It's so totally left field, but I listened to it and it was fabulous. So in the break, it was a 90-minute thing, 2 45-second sessions, I go out to the family who are having dinner and said, we're changing this whole concept of chores. You guys aren't going to get paid. My kid's 9. You're not going to get paid for doing chores, because that's just part of being a family. We expect you live in the house, you're going to do certain things.
Help out.
Not paying you for that. But I'll tell you what I am going to do, because my son is not a reader. Tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you dollars for pages. So dollars for pages read. Anyway, by the time I went back, listened to the other 45 minutes and came out, he's got a book and he's reading a book. And that's for parents out there. And if you think about this from an incentive program, incentive focus for businesses, incentivize the people.
Yeah.
Based on your expectations. So for my son, Doug, I haven't actually given him any cash yet. He came out last night with his pile of David Walliams books. He's read 6 David Walliams books. But what we do now, every Saturday morning, my wife goes to yoga. Me and the kids, we go into town. We go to the bookshop. They choose a new book because they normally generally read a book every week now, which is just extraordinary. We then go breakfast with Dad, pancakes at their favorite coffee shop, and they have quality time with Dad. They have pancakes, get a new book, and it's totally changed the way they think and the way they act such a positive way.
I love that. You know,
and then I've got a blog coming out next week on this. Then how do we translate that into business? Incentive programs that actually work for the people and potentially individualized.
I love that. Yeah, talking about incentives. For example, one of my clients I'm partnering with, they're getting a phone team set up here. And it took me some arguing with the CEO, but I was like, let them go home early. If they hit the quota, let them go home early. Pay them for a full day, let them go home early. That's how FedEx was able to do the anywhere in the world overnight. They said to everybody, hey, you can go home once the plane's unloaded and the trucks are full. Once you get all the packages delivered, you can go home. I'll pay you for a full day. Because before they were hanging out, because I got to be here till 3. So I'm going to sit and have a late, long lunch. And hey, I get to finish up, go home. Talk about entrepreneurship and kids. I don't mean to brag, but I think I'm doing flipping fantastic with this. My daughter's 4. She has her own store called Made by Malaya. She's already made $300 selling items from around 20 cents, 25 cents to $2. So I'm trying to teach my daughter like things like gardening. I got my daughter into gardening because I feel like there's so many life lessons through that. You have to prepare, you have to plant the seed, you have to nurture it. It takes time, timing, right? Parasites. I feel like there's so many lessons from that. And one of the things I bought was a rock polisher. You throw in a bunch of ugly rocks, some sand and water and that, and it just tumbles for days and makes a lot of noise in your living room. But after you pull out these beautiful polished gemstones, I like to just assure the idea of polishing an idea that you might have someone you want to be or something you want to be good at, but over time, it starts off rough, but over time, it becomes this beautiful thing. And her mom loved these gemstones. I said, by the way, did you know you can make jewelry out of these? I got them a little kit with epoxy and some glue and stuff. And they started making necklaces and earrings out of these things. And my daughter's private school has an annual fair every year. And I was talking to my wife and saying, we should maybe get Malaya a booth at the fair. She's 4, but just as the experience.
Sorry, my children have just got home from school.
Oh, hi, kids.
That's Sarah.
Hello. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Polishing gemstones, they're making jewelry. And I said, hey, we should maybe get her a booth at this annual fair, like a little market booth. This is the experience. And as we talked about that, the mall across the street from us, we found out was doing a kidopreneur event, which was exactly that, a farmer market for kids to set up booths and sell at. So her and her mom made a bunch of necklaces and keychains, and she was doing the work. And we got some molds for pouring epoxy, and she had sparkled stuff, letter, like keychain, like name, letter, keychain things. And she almost sold. It was good that not all of it was dried on the first day because we sold out like in the first 2-3 hours. And now we got her little online store. And now when she's talking about stuff, we're like, how many keychains do you need to sell to get that? And she's all excited. She's got a little cart. She's so excited for the actual fair at her school coming up. And she's like practicing, like she'll walk around the island, come around and be like, hi, welcome to Made by Malaya. Everything's made by me, Malaya. You see anything you like? How about this? It matches your shirt. How about this? It looks good with your shoes. Hey, I like your earrings. How about this? This might look good on you too. Like she was practicing in our living room, going around. Can we practice again? Push your little cart. Hi, welcome to Made by Malaya, where everything's made by me, Malaya, this little 4-year-old girl.
It's absolutely fabulous. And those life lessons will stick with her forever.
Oh, yeah. Hands down. I'm trying to live today as if I'm going to die tomorrow. We planted a farm. We got 350 dragon fruit. Those things will produce food for 20 to 30 years. If we get to 500, my daughter, my wife, they'll always have something they can sell with very low. It's a cactus. It's a cactus that produces an abundance of fruit. Oh, no, you forgot to water it. Well, it's a cactus. Oh, no, it's too hot outside. Ah, it's a cactus. But it'll keep producing. 500 of those things will keep producing. So just like this. That's such a great...
You know, it's interesting you asked me, how do I get into coaching? I was misdiagnosed about 10 years ago with a lung issue that I was told I'd had 3 to 5 years to live.
Wow.
And, you know, it really focuses your mind. You know, you've just seen my daughter come in. You know, if you try and get me before 9:30 in the morning, you'll never get me. Because I get up, I have breakfast with them, get them dressed, I drive them to school, make them lunches, drive them to school. I then go for a walk. You know, normally this time of the afternoon, because they're playing something at school, they never finish their lunch, so I go out and make sure they eat their lunch and have a cup of tea and find out how their day is. And I spend my life, age 50, I'm 63 now, 57, I finally found the perfect life. It's people pay me to help them, which I would do for free generally in another life. And I'm building life experiences for my family.
Yeah. Yeah.
And put it all together. It's just phenomenal.
I love that. That's so powerful. That's a good place to be in. What are some of the greatest mistakes you see your clients and other entrepreneurs making?
It's always the key one is always about people, not hiring early enough and not hiring the right people. Mm. They talk about hire slow, fire fast, holding on to the wrong people for far too long, who can significantly damage your brand or the business. Right people. This is Jim Collins from Good to Great. Right people on the bus doing the right things. Yeah, right people on the bus in the right seats doing the right things. And one of the things about companies that are scaling is that businesses change and people have to change with it. So they may, just because they're the 2IC now, they may not have the capacity to be the 2IC of a 50-person company. So it's managing and coaching your people for the best expectations for them and for yourself. But guaranteed, if you have the right people doing the right things, everything else follows.
I agree. I think that's a really, really good lesson. Are there any habits that you feel have helped you and your most successful clients on the path to success?
Oh, look, I've always been a forever learner. I'm always looking at the virtual mentors. I'm always looking for that extra bit. There's books upon books. A lot of it's about rhythm, getting the right rhythm in place. As an example, my team is spread all over. My VA, I've got two VAs in virtual assistants in the Philippines. I've got my video editor is in Ukraine. I've got another VA in Ukraine. I've got my bookkeeper is about 10 miles away from me. So I've got a virtual team about 11, I think it is now. Having the right rhythm so that they've all got the direction they need is critical. And then building the processes so that they can actually do what you want them to do. Systematizing any business is critical because it's the only way you can get out of it. And it's the only way that the business can grow.
I agree. Ironically said that I had a call this morning with Michael Gerber.
All right. The Revisited. That's where it all starts from.
Yeah. Work on your business, not in your business. People that don't know that Michael Gerber, that stay tuned. New interview coming soon. And where do you think things are going? Obviously, we're in a phase of flux geopolitically, global economic conditions are changing. A lot of people, myself included, feel there is an unelected body of individuals and agencies that have a particular agenda, it would appear. What do you see coming down the pipeline? What are you trying to keep your finger on? What do you think the audience maybe needs to listen to, pay attention to as well?
There's so much we can't control in the world. We've just had a referendum in Australia about the rights of our Aboriginals and Torres Strait Islanders, our Indigenous people. And I was distressed at the outcome of that. But the reality is I can't do anything about that. Actually, I can. So I've reached out. A friend of mine is the Chief Operating Officer of an Aboriginal Health Service in Broken Hill, which is in the centre of Australia. So I reached out to her yesterday and said, I can't do anything about the result. But what I can do is find a group of Aboriginal business owners and coach them pro bono.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm in the process of going through that, trying to find a group where I'll put a pro bono coaching package together. I just think there is so much going on. And number one, if you look at what's happening in Israel and Palestine at the moment, is a classic example of where Hamas is a horrendous terrorist organization. And something has to be done about them, particularly what they did 2 weeks ago. But having said that, not all Palestinians in Gaza are terrorists. And
it's a two-way street because it is an occupation. It is undeniably an occupation. It is a difficult thing where true Judaism would be to put the guns down. I don't think there's anything going on in Judaism that permits what's happening over there right now. And as you mentioned, there's bad actors, 100%.
Absolutely. So what can I do about that? I can go and pick up a gun and join the fight, which I was trained to do, but am I going to? No. If I was advising business owners at the moment and my clients, a lot of it is about focus on what you can do and focus on your business. Because recession, pandemic, war, we can't affect those. But what we can do is make our businesses work better, look after our teams better, look after their families better, have the right culture.
Right.
And do your little bit. I've got one of the things I have in my business is the 1% pledge. 1% of our time, 1% of our revenues, we donate. So interesting enough, that 1% pledge works really well with this looking for Aboriginal corporations that I can help.
I love that. I love that a lot. Yeah, I don't know if I mentioned or not, but in 2020, when everybody was arguing about the science, the man that raised me worked in applied physics and geology, and I've helped businesses make a couple million, a couple hundred thousand, but I've also had clients almost go bankrupt. I had one client, we took her business from 1.3 to 2.7 million, and the IRS almost took her out because her accounting for around a million wasn't enough for a couple. And for me, it was like, oh, there's more to it than just marketing and sales. And so and this is years ago, but then when the pandemic hit and everyone was arguing about the science, it made me stop and think, well, what does the science have to say about business success? I think I know. I have some ideas. What does the research say? And I hired 10 assistants to help me go through 50 plus years of academic literature, all the studies we get our hands on, hundreds of thousands of studies. And we mapped out all the factors these studies said they proved. And then what we did is we tried to look at the signal to noise, the most common factors. And we found 8 critical success factors or categories. And they were self-efficacy, market intelligence, strategic planning, marketing strategy, sales strategy and skills, money management, business operations, and business intelligence. And everything fits under those, from cybersecurity to meeting rhythms to hiring plans, legal compliance, your Twitter profile, your social media marketing plan, all of that fits under those 8 categories. And one of the things that we did, we actually did find a 9th category. Big shocker. There was a 9th. It was government and economic conditions. You can have a friendly government or a hostile government. You have a good economy or bad economy. But what we discovered was exactly what you said. As business owners, all we can do is focus on the things that we can control. We're not going to change the government by ourselves. We can get involved. We can have discussions, facilitate that, right? We can empower others with as much as we can, give back, develop the community as much as we can. But ultimately, as business owners, we can only focus on the things that are within our control.
That's
so
right.
I just wanted to put that out there because I think that what you said is really powerful. And I love that you have a feeling about a cause. And so you're personally getting involved. You're not abdicating responsibility. You're taking on personal responsibility and going, look, the government's not going to do it. So I'm going to step in and do what I can, do my part. And I think that is fantastic. I love that attitude, that mentality. I really do.
Thank you. But, you know, Daryl, you saw maybe a little bit of a glimpse of that. Our children are adopted.
Right.
From Ethiopia. But my wife and I when we were adopting, we took 18 months out and worked in places like Cambodia and Ethiopia, working with Australian charities, helping them restructure. And going to places like Poipet on the Thai-Cambodian border, which is the child trafficking center of the world, you realize you can't change it all.
Right. Right.
You can do... So, you know, we have an ongoing gifting program to a number of charities in those countries that are specifically targeted at children. Yeah, we can't fix it all, but we can do our bit.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah. 100%. 100%. Yeah, I think that we need to move towards a world of more personal accountability. I think wars should be fought and funded by the people who want them, as opposed to wars being fought by young men who don't know each other, but four old men who do. I think this is back ass words. It should be funded and fought by the people who want them. And this, we need to come back to the values of meritocracies and personal accountabilities and get rid of these victim mindsets and the pandering to everybody. I think we need to ensure that we get rid of systemic racism and that as best as we can. But the free market's the best system that we've had because markets are unknown and unknowable. And it's hard to know how many people are in market for something, but everyone can acknowledge excellence. And in a true meritocracy, the most excellent are the ones that win and get, right? That's what people buy. And people, we all know situations, whether it's our calling and waiting on hold for our cell phone or our internet provider, we hate monopolies because they don't treat us well. We become these massive conglomerates that just betray us and not either betray us or they just, you know, they're just so slow and inefficient. We need as small as government as we need. Politicians, you know, once upon a time in a galaxy far away, back in the age of Star Wars, the most evil thing in the galaxy was still a politician. So I just think that's where I stand on that. We need government, we need governance, but we don't need big ones. And I think that what you're talking about is getting involved. People getting involved is critically important. Seeing the issues for themselves. I think that's so valuable and so important.
And it goes back to your conversation about the way you're raising your daughter. That's where it all starts.
100%. 100%.
You know, I'm getting off when we finish up. I'm taking my children and playing, which is a touch football competition. I'm coaching, God help me, 12, nine-year-old girl. But it's about teaching leadership skills.
I love that. I love that so much. And I do want to be respectful of your time.
No, I know.
This has been a great call with a ton of information. I've got a page of notes here. People may want to listen to a couple of times. Is there anything that I haven't asked you about that I should have asked you about?
I think you've covered an enormous amount, Daryl. No, look, I can't think of anything, but look, follow me on LinkedIn. People will get everything they've missed, they'll get from there.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Yeah. So is that the best place for them to follow if they want to know more?
Yeah, look, jump on my LinkedIn in profile. They can get everything about me, contact details. And
okay. Yeah. So if people want to learn more, you can go sign up actually as a free newsletter as well on LinkedIn. You can find Jonathan Herpes, JonathanHerps. He found the right guy when he's for Scale Up Growth. And you can sign up for his free newsletter. Jonathan, this has been such a powerful interview. A lot of timeless information. I think that'll be valuable next year, right now, 10 years from now. I think this is really timeless knowledge. Again, as I already asked, but is there anything that you want to add? Is like your final thoughts or...
Oh, look, I always come back to, when I'm coaching my clients, is this concept of unique ability and this concept of time. What do they say? At no time, on the deathbed, no one says, I wish I'd spent more time on my business. Mm. And so building there's no such thing as a balanced life for an entrepreneur, but
Right. Building
a life where you actually do get quality time with family, friends, and doing those things that are important to you, as well as running a business. If you can build a business that all of that comes together, I would call that success.
100%.
And the final thing for me is just thanking you. The content you put out in your podcast and the interviews you do are fabulous. And if this is the first time for anybody, go back and look at Daryl's interviews. There's some wonderful, and he's mentioned he's got Michael Gerber coming on. That to me would be an absolute must listen to.
Well, I also have this great interview with this guy, Jonathan Herpes. You can also find him on LinkedIn, JonathanHerps. Jonathan, if I could steal another 30 seconds of your time, you mentioned time and how that you said that those are unique ability and time are some of the most important things every time you talk with clients. I have a poem I actually read almost every day. It's in my daily reads list when I plan out my day every morning. I want to take a second and read it here if that's okay.
Yeah, please.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
It goes, time is the inexplicable raw material of everything. With it, all is possible. Without it, nothing. The supply of time is truly a daily miracle, an affair genuinely astonishing when one examines it. You wake up in the morning and lo, your purse is magically filled with 24 hours of the unmanufactured tissue of the universe of your life. It is yours. It is the most precious of possessions. No one can take it from you. It is unstealable. And no one receives either more or less than you receive. In the realm of time, there is no aristocracy of wealth and no aristocracy of intellect. Genius is never rewarded by even an extra hour a day, and there is no punishment. Waste your infinitely precious commodity as much as you will, and the supply will never be withheld from you. Moreover, you cannot draw on the future. It is impossible to get into debt. You can only waste the passing moment. You cannot waste tomorrow. It is kept for you. You cannot waste the next hour. It is kept for you. I have said the affair was a miracle, is it not? You have to live on this 24 hours of daily time. Out of it, you have to spend health, pleasure, money, content, respect, and the evolution of your immortal soul. Its right use, its most effective use, is a matter of the highest urgency and of the most thrilling actuality. All depends on that. Your happiness, the elusive prize that you are all clutching for, my friends, depends on that. If one cannot arrange that an income of 24 hours a day shall exactly cover all proper items of expenditure, one does muddle one's whole life indefinitely. We shall never have any more time. We have, and we have always had, all the time there is. By Arnold Bennett, How to Live on 24 Hours a Day. I love that poem. I think it's Arnold Bennett, How to Live on 24 Hours a Day.
I love that.
Yeah, I love that too. That's why it's in my daily reads. I have some things I go and I read something from that in my daily reads, just little snippets like that. But again,
fabulous. And it's interesting when you say, I have got another
one. You're good.
My podcast. So I interview founders and CEOs of scaling businesses. And I have 9 questions. So it's aimed to be a 30-minute podcast. based on around some, 9 questions. And one of the questions, and look, there's some, I have to say, there's some really good questions there. Like when you think of the word successful, who comes to mind and why? It's just fabulous when you get 100 versions of that. But the one thing they all say is their greatest learning. One is persistence, not walking away. But the big thing is, if you're thinking about starting a company, do it now. Mm. Don't wait. Mm. There's never a perfect time.
Right.
You're better to get on with it.
100%.
Totally related to the time thing.
100%. It's never going to be the right time to have kids. It's never going to be the right time to start that business. It's never going to be the right time to get that dog you want to do. It's never going to be the right time. Never going to be the right time. You just have to manage your time as best you can, move forward and adjust. And I think what you said as well, like you've set boundaries. And I think that is critically important. And necessity is the mother of innovation. And so by respecting, having some sort of semblance of work-life balance and not, what am I trying to say? Not giving in. That's not the word I want to say, but not like having boundaries, firm boundaries and no exceptions that can force innovation and force the life that you want to have. And we're all going to die anyways.
Yep.
So, you know what I mean? Enjoy the time we got while we're there. Design exactly. The life how you want it. Jonathan, this was such an honor and a pleasure. Again, people may want to listen to this more than once to make sure they got all the goods. If you haven't, go check him out on LinkedIn, Jonathan Herps. Sign up for his free newsletter. Jonathan, thank you again so much, knowing that you do have boundaries, you do have your own following, you do have your kids, you do have your own clients. Thank you for coming and sharing with my audience and I. So we can all do a little bit better.
Yeah, thanks so much for the invitation. I've enjoyed it enormously. It says a lot. Mm-hmm.